All right, everyone, welcome to All Things Trek. Don't worry, if anyone who thinks this is a little strange, everything's fine. Bob is not, you know, gone. I'm just doing the intro this week. Deal with it.
It's true. We like change around here. We're not scared of it.
Yeah, so I'm Oren.
We're not scared of it at all. I'm Bob.
And today we're going to be talking about some of the way that the different alien cultures are portrayed in Star Trek Online. Because it's been a while since we've talked about Star Trek Online.
Yeah, I do love me some Star Trek Online, which actually we just got, I did anyway, our buddy Jim, into Star Trek Online, and he's all sorts about it.
He's like trying to go for the Galaxy Dreadnought because he heard it has the biggest gun.
$25 outright.
Yep. He's going to pay real money for the Galaxy Dreadnought.
Speaking of change, I have glasses now.
Yeah, Bob has glasses because apparently
I do.
Apparently, the DMV thought you needed them to drive.
Yes,
which
is
kind of a funny story.
As I've been wearing them more and more and more and taking them off and looking at stuff, I'm realizing more and more that I probably did in fact just need glasses all my life.
Okay,
because now I can read things at a fair distance now, whereas before I couldn't.
Okay.
this is just how it's been all my life. I didn't think it was different.
Huh. That's good.
It's just like, oh,
at least it wasn't a waste of money.
Yeah, it's still out of pocket, like $280, which I didn't really want to spend. But
yeah,
you know.
All right. Well, I'm pretty excited because I just got my gun carriage for War Machine.
Yeah,
and the thing looks really cool. I'm not crazy about the fact that it's horse drawn. I would have preferred it to be steam powered in some way. But whatever, I don't really care.
I helped make those.
Yeah, I quality controlled them. I was there. I was part of that job too.
Then why is yours a bunch of shift on the back, Oren?
Because I was done. I didn't quality control that particular bunch.
Ooh.
That was somebody else who I won't name.
Oh my goodness.
But anyway, so that's what's been going on with us. I've been considering taking a look at the Star Trek animated series just because I realize it's like the one thing of Star Trek I've never actually watched.
You haven't?
Except for, I've watched an episode of the animated series.
Watched
the one that first introduced the holodeck when it was called the Recreation Room. And I've decided from that I had no reason to ever watch it again. But, you know, I've sat through almost the entire series of Enterprise and Voyager. So I feel like I owe the animated series at least a little bit so that I can
Let's not say anything we can't take back now.
Well, I mean, I can't really hate something I haven't seen, not with the same
This
passion.
Is true. I can tell you that the animated series wasn't that great.
No,
I mean, it was definitely... It's a series aimed at kids.
Yeah, I'm sure it wasn't very good, but it's Star Trek, it's on Netflix, and I haven't seen it, so I think this is going to happen. But anyway, Star Trek Online. So again, this is going to be, Bob's going to be our go-to guy, because he knows things about Star Trek Online.
It's funny that you mentioned that turn of phrase like that, because I was the go-to guy, as my dad says, for a lot of Star Trek stuff.
Oh dear.
Yeah. Like, I made comment on how, God, I don't remember who it was, but these two people would have to do, like, a Vulcan Lerpa fight. And he looks at me and is like, what's a Lerpa? I'm like, it's that Vulcan weapon, you know, Kirk and Spock fight with him. It's like...
See, I didn't know what that was called until you reminded me. I always thought of it as the Vulcan Spoon Blade.
The Spoon Blade.
Because it's got, like, you know, it's got that weird crescent-shaped blade on the front that looks kind of like a spoon.
Mm-hmm.
That's always how I thought of them.
Right.
But, you know, the first thing I noticed is I was looking on the wiki, because that's like, all of my information for this episode is from some last-minute wiki searching.
Well, the Star Trek Online wiki is a pretty good go-to source for
right,
a lot of
but
stuff.
Damn,
despite the fact that it's got grammatical and spelling
it
errors
up the
wazoo. It
is in serious need of an editor. It has got so many grammatical errors, and
well,
I just want to... I want to edit it, but I'm too lazy.
We don't even play Star Trek Online.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm considering it once it goes free-to-play, depending on, like, how much it sucks to be a free-to-play member.
Well, I mean, they have a matrix, quote-unquote, is what they call it, of the, you know, advantages and disadvantages of being a free player and then also a subscriber still.
Okay, well,
I mean, essentially,
that.
It would just be, as a subscriber, I'm not losing anything personally myself,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I'm probably just going to keep subscribing so I can have all my stuff, because otherwise I'd lose several things.
Right.
I don't remember what they are off the top of my head, but...
I'll have to look at that.
As a free player, you still get, you know, a good amount of stuff that would be good for, like, a casual player.
Well, I'll tell you, the first thing I noticed was that, The when I was looking at the Star Trek the Federation faction list, I noticed that the Ferengi were on there, and I was like, that's a little unusual. Why are the Ferengi on this faction list?
Because Rom was all like, hey, we want to join the Federation. The Federation's like, okay.
Right. I looked that up, and I noticed that it mentioned that, well, they haven't actually joined the Federation according
right.
to the wiki, but they mm-hmm. they do mention in the wiki that the various social reforms have made the Ferengi more willing to seek careers in Starfleet.
Yep.
And that links back to what I was raging about last week with the social reforms, and we were hoping that maybe those would be short-lived, but no. No, those are
no.
those are here to stay. And also, can you tell me like, are the Bajorans a Federation member now? Because you can be a Bajoran in Starfleet, but it doesn't actually
I have
say.
I've heard and read conflicting things on this.
Really? Do tell.
I've had, well, for one, when you read, when you not read, but watch the, or no, not watch. It's the,
when you do
there's
something.
There's a thing on the Star Trek Online website that is, like, a timeline.
Uh-huh.
And it's talking about, or no, not on the website. I'm thinking about, Star Trek, The Needs of the Many, which is a book that was released not too long ago, which actually has a bunch of information leading up to the events of Star Trek Online.
Right.
Which it's actually Jake Sisko who is writing and authoring this thing,
mm-hmm.
along with who the actual author is. Some Martin something or other, I forget what his name is. But
yeah.
It's Jake Sisko doing his reporter thing, is what he's doing. And he's talking to all these characters from the Star Trek universe. Like, we talked to Jack at one point. You remember Jack from
the genetically enhanced guy?
Yeah, he talks to Jack. And
I remember those guys.
Talks to him, talks to Garrick, talks to Franklin Drake, which is a character in-game. He's actually a Section 31 agent.
I kind of want to pick up this book now. I mean, like, even though
I could let you borrow it.
That would be cool, because I'm not a huge fan of the Star Trek Online universe, but this sounds like a really cool premise for a book.
Yeah, I mean, so, yeah, it just kind of chronicles in order the things that were going on from more or less 2379 up to 2409, well, a few years before 2409, which is when the game takes place.
Mm-hmm.
It's talking about these things, and there's a couple of things in there about Bajor, I think, where it's talking about, oh yeah, Bajor wants to join the Federation, then we just kind of don't really hear anything about it after that. And then with the information we get on Star Trek Online, it totally sounds like the Bajor is in the Federation. But then we have information that they're not. It's like, well, where do they sit? So you're not the only one who's confused on that point.
Can you actually go to DS9?
You can.
Is there any indication going there?
No.
Like, do the Bajoran officers still wear the militia uniform?
I mean, it's very much it looks like a very Starfleet-controlled station still. Because you've got, you know, Starfleet all up in ops. You've got Starfleet Admiral running around the promenade. Or, well, standing in one place anyway. About as active as NPCs get anyway.
Yeah, right.
I mean, there's, like, device merchants and stuff that are hanging around on the promenade that are all these different alien races that aren't aligned with anybody. But, I mean, it's like they say it's a non-aligned station, but I mean, it doesn't look very non-aligned to me when I walk around.
Well, like I was saying, I think the clincher would be if you can find a Bajoran security officer wearing a militia uniform. Because if they're wearing a militia uniform, that means they're not in Starfleet, which means chances are that Bajor has not joined the Federation. But if they're all wearing Starfleet uniforms, then Bajor is probably a Federation member.
I don't spend a whole lot of time in DS9, but I can check that out.
All right, we're going to hike on over there after this podcast.
We are.
And check it out. So, all right, so next, what is a Saurian, and why do they look like gumdrops?
Well, Saurians have been a thing for a long, long time.
Yeah,
Brandy comes from.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that.
You know, from the original series. They are, the closest thing I could pick out them being is, like, what we consider gray aliens today.
No, they're supposed to be lizard people, actually.
They are?
Yep.
According to the wiki,
they are lizard people. They don't look like lizard people. If you turn up your graphics...
Because they look like what gray aliens would look like.
Yeah, their heads look like gumdrops. I turned up... If you look at the... There was a picture on the website, which I assume must have been with someone's graphics turned up all the way, and you can actually kind of see scales. So they're supposed to be lizard people, and there's a picture of what one looked like in, like, an off shot from the original series. Like, he was kind of in the background, and he's just a big old lizard guy. But for some reason, the animation for the face in Star Trek Online really smooths out the scales and makes it look like just a completely smooth face, even though he's supposed to have scales.
Well, that's one of the things about Cryptic's, like, character creation thing, is that there's just so many options there. Some of them are so minute that you just don't see them at all. It's one of those things, unless you have the graphics, like, cranked up all the way.
Right.
Right, and it's just one of those things, you know. Like, I never knew they actually had scales until you just told me.
Yep, that's a thing they apparently have. This isn't really a question, but, God, Tellarites are ugly.
Tellarites are pretty ugly, it's true.
I actually think they look better in Enterprise. I like the Enterprise makeup for them more, which is unusual, because Enterprise ruined the way most things look. But then, you know, they did a pretty good job on the Tellarites, I'll give them that.
Yep.
Alright, and so with the Klingons...
They don't seem to have a whole lot of character, though, in Star Trek Online. I mean, that being said, you don't really interact with very many alien races in Star Trek Online, aside from your bridge officers and maybe the NPCs you run into that give quests.
Right.
Even though most of them are from Starfleet anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're already, you know, like, you have some level of relatability with them, being that they're, like, Starfleet officers. But they don't have the same mannerisms you'd get, like we saw in a lot of the TV shows. Like, Tellarites are supposed to be argumentative.
Yep.
Right? Not so much in Star Trek Online.
Hmm.
You know, the only place I've actually seen them be argumentative was in a couple of Foundry missions. You know.
So fan content.
Fan content. That's right. All the Foundry missions and whatnot are things made by, you know, players.
Right.
Which, actually, I had to put in argumentative and stubborn Tellarites in my missions.
Good on you.
Because, you know, it's like, that's what they do. That's what they are. Starfleet's all about, the Federation's all about having all these cultures intermingle with each other and show each other their culture, no matter how much of a jerks they are.
Right.
No matter how big a jerks they are, that's whatever their culture may be.
All right, and so then we got the Klingons, and I gotta say, I understand that they had to, like, they had to figure out some way of incorporating different races into the Klingons, because it would be kind of weird if you were the Federation, you could play all these different races, and then you were the Klingons, and you could play the Klingons. So I get why they made it so you can play the Gorn and the Orions and the Nausicaans, but I don't understand, like setting-wise, the storyline seems to be that the Klingons fought a war with the Gorn and the Orion and kicked their ass and conquered their planet, and then there were, like, some Species 8472 infiltrators that they exposed. We'll get on more on that later.
very deep story,
like,
on that one.
That only happened, like, what, like 2 years before the start of this current Star Trek Online story?
5 years, I want to say.
Right, so it wasn't very long ago, and it just seems unusual that the Gorn and the Orions have assimilated so quickly into the Klingon military after just being conquered by them.
Well, I mean, the indications I get about just the Star Trek universe and Klingons is that they're territorial, you know, expansionists, right?
Right, right.
They go around conquering other, you know, races. Like, Martok said it the best, I think, when he was talking to Worf about, I don't remember the episode of DS9, but Martok and Worf are talking about something. And there's some rebellion happening somewhere. I think it might be Cardassians or something like that.
Is that the one where he says, we do not embrace other cultures, we conquer them?
Yes, exactly. We're not the Federation.
I don't remember what that was in reference to. It's like, we do not embrace other cultures, we conquer them.
And, yeah, exactly.
I was like, what? I don't... What was happening to make him say that?
I don't remember.
I'll have to look this up now. I don't remember what was going on.
I don't remember either. But I think that rings very true, because it seems like what happens is Klingons go conquer all these other cultures and whatnot, and then just, you know, more or less act like they're vassals to them and demand support in the form of, like, troops or ships or whatever it is you want to see. And I think that's exemplified in Star Trek Online through the fact that we have Gorn, Orions, Nausicaans, and Klingons all as playable races. And they've also got the Nausicaan ships, Gorn ships, and Orion ships that you can play as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were just playing as a Gorn on a Klingon ship.
Well, I am, because I really like Space Dinosaur.
Space Dinosaur.
I do. I mean, just because, and also, there's a couple of things. This is going to sound like bashing for a while. What Cryptic Online, or Cryptic likes to do, is give you DLC, essentially, is what they're doing. Like, they have a cash shop option.
Uh-huh.
And there's other ships you can fly at the lower levels that you can get by buying them with Cryptic points, which you get with real money.
Oh, dear.
Now, that's all well and good, but I'm not interested in spending, like, $5-$10 on a ship that I'm going to out-level.
Yeah, that's kind of annoying.
And some of those ships are lower-tier stuff.
It's like that moment in Dragon Age where you've given Alistair the plate mail that you got from that $10 DLC, and then he leaves your party because you made the wrong choice, and he takes the plate mail with him. It's like, hey, I paid $10 for that!
It's not my fault you made these mistakes.
I didn't do that.
It's not my fault you don't keep your cards closer to your chest.
Alistair is my bro. Alistair would never leave me.
Well, apparently he did.
No, that never... I'm just saying that's a thing that has happened to other people.
Oh, okay.
That never actually happened to me.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, back to Star Trek Online.
Yeah, so, I mean, all these ships are available. You don't see them a whole lot, though, because people aren't necessarily willing to shell out that money only to have it become obsolete later.
Right.
Like, a good point is, the Excelsior, for instance. I fly the Excelsior class.
Yeah.
I really like the Excelsior class. The only reason I bought it, though, is because I could fly it consistently at end game.
Mm.
That's the only reason I got it, though. I really love the Excelsior, but if it was anything lower than what's now Tier 5, which is end game tier content, I would not have gotten it.
Gotta love how the Excelsior, despite being over 100 years old by this point, is still the Federation's premier battle cruiser. It's like kill a sovereign at 30 paces.
Yep. Yeah. It's pretty cool stuff. I like it. Well, it's a tactical cruiser. I mean, what do you want from it?
I would like it to show its age a little bit.
They build new ones. It's cool. It's cool,
I mean,
bro.
You'll notice that the Constitution isn't exactly at the top of its game anymore.
Hey, man, they got the old-style Constitution as a Tier 1 ship.
Yeah, I love that ship. But it's
along with the NX.
Oh, Yeah. Where did you even get an NX? Did you, like, go rob a museum?
That's actually what the engineers did, I believe, is how the story goes, or something like that. Engineers were bored one day, and they just said, hey, let's see how much crap we can cram on the NX.
Okay.
And that's how the NX came to be again in the 25th century.
Yeah, you gotta love that kind of logic. It's like, you know, by that logic, I can totally retrofit a Model T with, like, a gun turret and go sailing through Iraq with it, and it would be awesome.
Yeah, CBS apparently was gritting their teeth over these kind of decisions, too.
Yeah.
Because all these decisions that, or all the things that Cryptic wants to do, they have to run by CBS first and go, hey, is this okay?
Yeah.
And CBS was like, you know, TOS Constitution, really? Come on. But they put it in anyway, because it's a game.
Nah, bro, it's right. Cool. All right, yeah. So I have one more question about the Klingons. Why can you play a joined Trill as the Klingons? What's up with that?
Because why not? I really think that was just a pure gameplay decision is what it was. Because Joint Trill initially was a pre-order item from... God, I don't remember where. But all these different places, you know how it goes. Like, GameStop has, like, their pre-order thing. Yeah. And then, like, Amazon has their pre-order thing. Best Buy has something else different.
Yeah, I know.
I got mine from GameStop personally. So I got the Red Matter Capacitor, which is that battery thing.
Oh, dear. Yeah. The Red Matter Capacitor.
And then Joint Trill was, I think, another one. Maybe it was directly from Cryptic themselves.
I would feel ripped off if I got Joint Trill instead of a Red Matter Capacitor. Because I looked at the Joint Trill. It's not really any better than an unjoined Trill. It just gets a different trait.
Yeah, but you can say you're a Joint Trill is really all it is. I'm not saying I like Joint Trill. I prefer my Red Matter Capacitor over the Joint Trill anyway. But it was more of a gameplay thing because, I mean, people who bought the game or pre-ordered it for Joint Trill who also wanted to play Klingons wouldn't have the benefit of a Joint Trill.
That makes sense. At first, I was thinking maybe it was just like they just decided, well, Dax was a Joint Trill and she thought Klingons were cool. Klingons. So all Joint Trill must love Klingons.
I mean, so that was a pure, like, gameplay economic decision, I feel, is what it was.
Okay.
For that. Because, I mean, I'd be kind of, you know, angry, too, if I was told, hey, here's this really awesome thing I wanted to give you if you're pre-ordered. Oh, by the way, you can't use it with the faction you want to play as. But, like, what? But,
like what?
I paid money for this.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Well, that makes sense. All right.
I don't agree with the decision.
I have to bring this up every time we talk about the Klingons in regard to Star Trek Online. Cryptic. It's pronounced Kronos. Kronos.
You want to spell it for them, too.
I know it's spelled with a Q, okay? Whatever. I pass basic English. I know that the Q doesn't always make a qu sound. I mean, seriously? Kronos? That sounds like something a 5-year-old would say.
I think Worf pronounces it that way, too.
No, it's Kronos. Even Memory Alpha says it's Kronos, okay? The biggest concentration of Star Trek nerds on the internet is Memory Alpha, and even they know it's Kronos.
Well, they may want to go ahead and run into the Star Trek Online train then.
Let's go.
I'm sure some of them are playing Star Trek Online.
I'm sure some of them are. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, seriously, like, can you imagine a little kid saying, hey, let's go see the Klingons on Kronos? It sounds like something a little kid would say. Anyway, like, you know, much the same way that we say critiqua and not critique.
I think I am now, just to troll you.
Okay, you do that.
Critiqua.
If Bob's not around for next podcast, you know why. Okay, so Romulans. What's going on with the Romulans these
Romulans
days?
Are a really awesome story, actually.
Okay.
All right, so we had 2379, Shinzon.
Yeah,
right?
Shinzon happened.
Had, you know, all his nonsense happening.
Okay.
At which point, directly afterwards, and a lot of this actually comes from the Titan novels, which is we see an empire divided. Yeah, so big power vacuum with Shinzon's gone. Elements within the, you know, empire vying for dominance and control. And it's kind of pretty much that story for the next, you know, 8 years.
Oh, dear.
At that point, which we get to 2387.
Uh-huh.
Hova Star.
That was an explosion sound for those of you at home.
Yeah, by the way. I'm really off of my sound effects tonight. Anyway, which apparently was sabotage
really?
By Remans.
Oh, what?
And Romulans, which I'll get to in a minute here. Yeah.
Okay.
According to Star Trek Online.
So what you're saying is that so far the Romulan Empire has fallen prey to two of the dumbest plot devices in Star Trek history.
Well, I'm not saying
Shinzon and the Hova Star.
Yeah.
Just wrecking the Romulan Empire.
Yeah.
My favorite part of Shinzon is how, like, the Romulans support him and then basically betray him for no reason.
Yeah.
They're just, like, he didn't really do anything to make them not like him. Anyway,
so the Romulan homeworld is destroyed, Remus is destroyed, and we have the, remember the power vacuum we had before that?
Yep.
Oh man, it just got worse by like 20 times.
Yeah, it did.
All these worlds that are, you know, like Romulan colony worlds or vassal worlds, whatever they have out there, are now more or less on their own. And the only kind of big power structures out there right now are Sela.
That's Tashiar's half Romulan future daughter.
Yes.
For those of you keeping track at home.
That's right. And, oh man, what's the other guy's name?
I might have it written down somewhere here.
Terrace is his name, I think?
Yeah, Terrace. That's yeah. Totally a thing.
Those are the two names we see thrown out there, which the new Romulan homeworld was declared as Rator 3, I think is how you pronounce it.
Yep.
Where Terrace was, I think. And then you have Sela, who is wandering around with a bunch of Romulan fleet.
Yeah, I remember that.
Which she's trying to get a whole bunch of worlds like under her banner, and then Terrace is just like, no, we don't want that to happen. Like, you're not a legitimate government. No, stop that. And then we have a lot of other independent Romulan worlds who are either just acting on their own or are trying to get into the Federation.
Or, like, flip-flopping back and forth.
Yeah, it's just a big mess of Romulan space right now.
And I feel so bad for Romulans.
A good analogy would be, remember the story about Eve, about that...
Eve Online?
Yeah, Eve Online. Okay. That had that big corporation which was in charge of a whole bunch of stuff, and that suddenly imploded because of all that espionage stuff. Because of
sabotage.
Yeah, and all that space just turned into the Wild Wild West.
Yep.
That's pretty much what Romulan space is right now.
It's kind of funny when you think about in Inter Arma Silent Legis, Sloane totally predicts that after the Dominion War, Romulus is going to be Earth's big threat. It's like, oh, eggs on you, Sloane. I bet Section 31 feels silly over that prediction. To be fair, I would never have seen Shinzon.
Well, I'm not done yet.
Oh, you're not done
yet? I'm not done.
Oh.
They remember the Iconians, right?
Yeah, okay, I remember the
Iconians. Okay, so some spoilers, maybe a little bit for you. I hope everyone who's played Star Trek Online has already played through the Reman featured episodes. But we have this whole plot come around where we start looking at the Vault. Now, the Vault is where the Narada, which is the Romulan ship Nero was in charge of.
Yeah, I remember that. I've read that comic.
Yeah, the Narada. This is where the Borg sphere is housed that the Romulans managed to capture and are taking a bunch of technology from to start, like, examining it and start outfitting ships with it, which is what the Narada was all jacked up with.
For those of you who didn't catch the name, the Narada is the supposed mining ship that they fight in the new Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
The in-canon explanation for why it looks like a Borg ship is that it is actually a Borg ship. It was modified with a bunch of Borg technology. It actually looked kind of like the Bebop before it was modified from Cowboy Bebop. It totally looked like that.
I can see that.
But yeah, there's this comic that tries to bridge the gap between...
It's called Countdown.
Yeah, it's terrible. but it tries to bridge the gap between the new movie and the original continuity.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is, you know, if someone told me to try to do that, I probably wouldn't have produced something very good either.
I think it does an alright job. But the Vault is this massive station.
Yeah.
Is what it is. And this is also where all these weapons came from. We see Thaleron weapons being produced there and whatnot. Shoot, I actually lost my train of thought, actually, when we just went on that whole tangent. What was I talking about?
We were talking about the Hobus Star being sabotaged and, like, the Remans and the Iconians.
Oh, right, the Iconians. Let me get back to that. We see that Sela is potentially in league with Iconians.
Okay. All right.
Oh, no, not Sela. The Tal Shiar.
All right.
Or at least a part of it. I know the Tal Shiar probably works in Cell somewhere to what Section 31 is doing.
Yeah.
That's the sense I get when I see Tal Shiar episodes come up. Because at the end of the featured episodes, we see an Iconian ship come out and grab Sela's, like, warbird and just, like, drag it back into some Iconian gate and leave. So we don't actually know if she's in league with them or she's been captured or what's going on with it.
So the Iconians...
But we do know that Iconians and Romulans are working together in some capacity.
So the Iconians are the ones with those gates, right?
Yep.
Okay.
With the probes that, like, rewrite your computer code
or
whatever.
Yeah, I remember that. I thought, wait, so are they villains? Is that what's going on with them?
We aren't really quite sure yet.
Okay.
There is no definitive answer on that as of yet, because we don't know what the next step in the story is yet for that. We know Iconians are back, we know that they're trekking around the galaxy, doing something, they have some plan of some sort going on.
They have evolved, they rebelled, they have a plan.
Yes, exactly, thank you, Battlestar Galactica. So yeah, Iconians are back, we don't actually know if they're good guys or bad guys. The tone seems to be that they're going to be bad guys at some point in the future, we don't know when though. And the tagline that we've gotten from Cryptic on some stuff is that an ancient enemy will, like, rear its head.
Which is weird, because the Iconians were totally painted as being, like, a peaceful civilization by the Next Generation.
Yep. that just got hosed by everyone else because they were scared of the gate technology.
Yeah, I've been noticing...
Demons of wind or something like that, right?
Yes, demons of like wind and lightning or something.
Wind and air. Something like that.
Smoke and air. I don't know. I've been noticing that Star Trek Online has like a bizarre like love-hate relationship with Star Trek canon, where like it loves Star Trek canon to the point of like it feels like it needs to include every obscure bit of Star Trek canon, but like then it like twists it around and like changes everything and makes it all weird and different. And so it's like I don't really know what their thought process on that is, because I've like, you know, the fact that they're including like the Organians and the Iconians, these guys that were only in like one episode and were never terribly important. And they're bringing...
Well, they're very iconic, though.
Yeah, I guess. But they're like...
Iconians iconic.
And it just seems like they're, like... I don't know. It seems like they're just really intent on dropping these buzzwords that people will recognize, but then, like, twisting them into stuff that they really didn't have... didn't bear any resemblance to in the shows.
Well, there's two parts to this, and they're kind of the same answer. And it comes down to gameplay. I mean, if you have the Iconians, you throw the Iconians in there, what can you really say about the Iconians, right? There's not a whole lot that we do actually know about them. So there's this effort put forward by the game developers to make it an active element. You know, how do you make Iconians active? Well, I want to see an Iconian. I want to talk to an Iconian, or I want to shoot an Iconian.
I wonder what choice they're going to make.
Now, okay, MMOs being what they are, and just games in general being what they are a lot of the time, I want to kill an Iconian. Right? So... That, and it's also a level of laziness, I feel, because they took that route of I want to kill an Iconian, which I think is what's going to be the next step in the story, is we're going to see Iconians come out and go, oh, you're all their slaves now because we're rad, is what it's going to be. That's essentially what it's going to boil down to, I feel, with the Iconians here, in whatever we see of them next. Next feature episode actually supposed to take place around Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. That's
cool. So we'll see what happens with that, but I don't think Iconians will be involved. Who's on the other side of the galaxy?
Look, the Iconians can be whatever they want.
Not other side of the galaxy, but other side of the Federation.
Look, the Iconians can be wherever they want, okay? They got teleporty gates.
This is true. They can be wherever they want.
I mean, I don't know. Like, visually, Star Trek Online has always appealed to me, but it just seems kind of strange with, like, I don't know. It's sort of sad how they reduce, like, everything in the Star Wars universe.
You did say Star Wars universe.
Bleh. Everything in the Star Trek universe gets reduced to, like, shoot it with lasers.
It does.
Which is, I guess, just the nature of an MMO. See, this is why I really want my dream Star Trek game to be a single-player game. Because, like, in a single-player game, I don't feel they would be under this sort of intense pressure to make everything, you know, a shootable target. But that aside, one thing that I noticed that I wanted to ask you about with the Romulans, I don't think anyone's going to recognize this name, but Tal Aurora,
Talora.
Anyway, she was one of the Romulans that was involved in the power struggle before the Hobus Star exploded, and then
she was one of Shinzon's minions. At
yeah,
one point.
She was in.
She killed the Senate with the Thaleron.
Yeah, and was she the one who like turned on Shinzon for no reason because he didn't want to have sex with her? Is that because was she the one that Shinzon yelled at because she was like trying to seduce him?
No, it was Zanatra.
Okay. Well, anyway,
Well, she's in Star Trek Online too.
Yeah, she's also there. But on Talura's wiki page on the Star Trek Online wiki, her image is a Borg, but there's no image on there's no information on the wiki to tell me about why she's a Borg or if she is a Borg. It's just that's her character portrait on the wiki page is that she's been assimilated.
Well, it's not Talura, it's Zanatra.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Talora was, I don't know if she was a senator or some senator's aide or whatnot, but we see her at the beginning of Nemesis, where she's got that medallion thing probably about the size of like a small like teacup plate or something like that.
The thing that turns the Senate to stone, I remember that.
Yeah, and then Denatra was a younger, you know, military commander. She was Commander Denatra is what she was.
Yeah.
But the jump from her being who she is in Nemesis to being Borg, I don't know where that came from exactly. I know there's some story behind it. It was really kind of out of nowhere and out of left field for me because I didn't know what the connection was between those two things. And mostly this might be because I don't get a chance to read what happens in the STFs a lot of the time, which is the Special Task Force, which are more or less raids.
Right.
Even though they're only five person, I feel they're just, you know, five-man dungeons because I come from World of Warcraft.
Yeah, exactly.
So, what happens there, I wish I could read the text and find out, but typically a lot of time what happens is The group's just running through it and clicking the continue button because they don't care. They want to fire phasers at stuff. So it's like, okay. So yeah, I'm not, probably one of the reasons why I don't do a whole lot of STFs anymore is because I really kind of want to get more into the story.
Yeah, see, this is why I don't like multiplayer story games. Because having another person there will invariably ruin the story for you.
Yeah.
This is the thing. This is what happens. I mean, yeah, I don't really... It's... Eh. All right.
Speaking of storytelling, I really feel that the Foundry authors do a better job more often than the Cryptic, you know, missions do.
That probably has to do with the Foundry people having as much time as they need to, and not being under, like, you know, release constraints. They can just do what they want. And also, I think that also has to do with the fact that we only really play the best Foundry missions. Like, you know, I wish
that was the case.
those are the ones that we talk about. Like, if we really want to look at all the Foundry missions, I think we'll find that a lot of them are really bad. But the ones that are really good are the ones that are produced by people who are devoted to the setting and have as much time as they need to finish their mission, and they're not under, like, really tight budget deadlines, and they're not being told you have to finish this now in a way that makes sense with this enormous sprawling story we've already created. So they have fewer constraints, and
I understand and appreciate that there are deadlines to be met when you're in that sort of, you know, scale production where, like, millions of dollars are involved. Like, yeah. I appreciate that aspect, but I feel it's such an excuse to be lazy, though.
Yeah, well, that's certainly true. And I just noticed that that's a thing with massive multiplayer online storylines, is that they tend to be, because especially in games that have, like, this sort of sprawling story that Star Trek Online has, where, like, there's a million things happening at once, it can often be very difficult to tell a story because you don't want to end up doing something that will make a future story that you plan to do not work.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my theory on why this is tough. But tell me about the Dominion. What are the Dominion doing now? I wasn't able... Like, the Dominion wiki page is blank. Well,
the Dominion in the Gamma Quadrant, I don't know what's going on with them. I don't have any idea what's going on with the Dominion in the Gamma Quadrant. I assume they're just kind of sitting there in their corner, just kind of being like, yeah, there's the Alpha Quadrant. That's a place we were at once.
Remember what happened last time we went there.
I know there are some Jem'Hadar hanging out.
Right.
In the Alpha Quadrant, along with what are called the True Way.
Yeah, the Cardassian terrorists.
Yeah,
guys.
Which apparently are a lot more militant or so this time around, because they're supposedly mentioned in Deep Space Nine, which we kind of talked about this a little bit last week, I think.
Originally, the True Way were mentioned as, like, being, you know, Cardassia for the Cardassians. They were Cardassian supremacists. Whereas now it sounds like they want to ally with the Dominion. So, like, and it actually mentions that in the wiki that they were reorganized by Gul Makada, I think is his name.
Sure.
Gul whatever, that guy. And he was like, hey, I don't like this new pussy-ass Cardassian government. Let's be assholes again. And the True Way were like, okay, we can get behind that.
That's pretty much what's going on with the True Way. So they had the Jem'Hadar come in along with the Cardassians to more or less, you know, try to retake Cardassia for, you know, the glory of Cardassia, to restore it to what it once was, you know, this great sprawling empire. Well, as the rest of Cardassia and what I was like, you know, we're kind of done with that.
Yeah.
we're cool. It's fine. We really don't need to be bothering with this.
Well, these guys are pretty deluded if they think that Cardassia can just become an empire again. Because, like, you know, the reason Cardassia is, you know, basically not a power anymore is because they backed the wrong horse. You know, they tried to fight.
They didn't have Space Jesus on their side.
They fought a war with the rest of the galaxy and they lost.
Yep.
And, you know, when that sort of thing happens, you typically get your, you know, get your stuff rocked. You don't really get to be a power anymore for a while. I mean, you know, talk to Germany. See what they have to say about this.
I don't know. Germany's actually kicking ass right now in Europe.
Right, but it took a lot longer than that. I mean, it took something like 60 years for Germany to build itself back up. And also, we built Western Germany up specifically to deal with the Soviet Union because we wanted a nice buffer zone.
In Soviet Russia, Germany built you.
Yep. But, I mean, so there's basically a bunch of rogue Jem'Hadar running around with the True Way.
Rogue Jem'Hadar running around with the True Way. Okay, did I tell you about baby stomping mission yet?
Oh my goodness, no, you did not.
Alright, so you know how Jem'Hadar are bred, right?
Yeah.
They're like in these egg case things or whatever.
Yeah, they're in cloning tubes.
Okay, so there's this planet you gotta go to. Starfleet orders you to go there because they heard that there's this changeling. I think it might be Lost, too, actually. One of the other changelings that Odo runs into later on in the series.
Oh, Lost. The guy who can turn into fire?
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy. That guy
I think
was
it might
rad.
Be him.
I love that guy.
Or it might not be. I don't remember. Anyway, there's a changeling there who's
that
like...
That guy actually... A quick tangent. That guy actually gave me the idea for the final boss of a really cheesy Deep Space Nine game where you go and fight the Great Link and the Great Link turns into a spaceship. Because he can totally turn into a spaceship. That's one of the things he can transform into. And I was like, oh man, what if like a million changelings all transformed into the same spaceship? That would be a rad spaceship.
Super spaceship.
All right, but anyway, keep going.
So Starfleet wants you to go there and like deal with this problem of like Jem'Hadar being bred in the Alpha Quadrant.
Okay.
Right? Because I think that was one of the points of like the new treaty they had signed, is that you can't breed any Jem'Hadar in the Alpha Quadrant.
No, seriously, don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
That is a no-no.
Yeah, at the end of the war back in 74. So you go there and you find out that the Jem'Hadar are actually breeding more Jem'Hadar.
As Jem'Hadar want to.
And there's just these pits like full of eggs that have force fields over them. Uh-huh. And you have to basically euthanize all the baby Jem'Hadar.
That doesn't sound like something Starfleet would
do. No, it's cool. You're doing true Starfleet officer work. I was reading this text, like, this can't be serious. This is, what?
That's terrible.
It is terrible.
That's terrible. I mean, I think in that situation, what Starfleet would probably actually do is round them up and, like, put them on an uninhabited planet and be like, go nuts, guys.
No, that's not what happens here.
You drop the occasional, like, Ketracel white shipment on them to make sure they don't all just die of drug withdrawals.
Mm-mm, you totally stomp on them.
That's awful.
Just these little poor little, like, Jem'Hadar baby eggs.
Thanks, Cryptic. Oh my goodness, okay, alright, I need to go take a shower, I'll be back.
Doing true Starfleet officer work, it's okay.
True Starfleet officer work.
It's okay.
In the next episode, you are going to destroy an orphanage. An evil orphanage.
Evil orphanage. So, I mean, yeah, it doesn't really feel like there's a whole lot of depth to the villain Cardassians or the Jem'Hadar. They're very much they feel like cardboard cutouts.
Yeah.
Is what they feel like when they're in running around Beta Ursa or Zeta Andromeda, which are the sector blocks that are out there.
Are they just like dudes you can kill without any kind of like question about why you're killing them?
More or less, yeah.
All right.
I mean, there's stories that pertain to them being bad guys. Like there's you run into the son of Tom Riker.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, which he's like leading these refugees to some place in the Badlands or something. It feels like a Maquis thing is what it feels like.
Huh.
In the true air, like, no, we don't want them going anywhere because they're bad people. It's like, you got no proof of that. They're not bad people. So,
I mean, you're the true way. If you say they're bad, that's like a 90% boost to their goodness rating.
Exactly.
But
I would actually like to segue into the Terran Empire from the Mirror Universe this point. Because we see them.
What?
We do. We see them. And they were launching a whole invasion on our galaxy.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the thing. And they have ships just like ours.
Oh, dear.
Just like ours. The only difference is that their nacelles, instead of being blue, are purple.
Oh, well, purple is the color of evil. Everyone
purple knows. Is the color of evil.
Everyone knows that. I mean, that makes sense. Also, their midriffs are deleted on their uniforms.
Yeah. And also, really, just kind of, they feel like more cardboard cutout type enemies. Because it's just very much like, yeah, we're bad guys. And literally all the exhibition you get is that after Smiley, which is the O'Brien double in the other universe, kind of like takes over, right? He decides that he wants to rebuild the Empire and then later on take over the Prime Galaxy.
Okay.
Just do it. It's just a thing that'll happen.
That doesn't sound like Smiley.
I know,
Smiley.
Right?
Smiley was a cool dude.
This is what the exposition was, and the mission was just like, yeah, Smiley was just like, yeah, screw those guys. We're going to go take them.
What a jerk.
I know.
I
don't think he's alive still at this point.
Right.
Because we're 30 years after Nemesis at this point, and that was 5 years or 6 years after we saw Smiley last, I think.
He'd probably still be alive. He'd be an
old
80s,
man.
Depending, I mean, like...
Well, sort of old man.
I mean, like, you know, this is, like, Star Trek. Like, McCoy was running around at, like, what, 140 in Encounter at Farpoint?
Something like that.
He was really old. I mean, you know, people live longer in the future. It's
yeah, but
thing.
It's the Mirror Universe where things are a little harsher, though.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, I don't know.
I feel 80 would probably be the cap. Okay, a lot of people's ages there in the Mirror Universe. Just given how, like, Spartan and dystopian it was.
But then again, he was basically in charge of everything. I figure if anyone had the resources to live longer, it would have been him.
Yeah. But it was just this really drastic turnaround. I really feel like the Cryptic wanted to do, yeah, let's do something with the Myriadverse. Yeah, let's have them invade our Prime Universe.
This is exactly what I was talking about, where Cryptic is, like, obsessed with bringing in all these random bits of Trek canon, but, like, not really knowing what to do with them once they're there.
Yeah, and it's very much feels like they're launching, like, a true full-on assault invasion of the Prime Galaxy, because there's just so many ships and so much story going on there, but at the same time, while there's story there going on, the actual villains aren't presented with a whole lot of development. Once again, it seems like the entirety of, like, the Deep Space Nine corner of the galaxy has been largely ignored as far as character development goes.
Well, that would be continuous with the rest of the way Star Trek treats Deep Space Nine. It's like, hey, you were good. Now get out, leave.
Yeah,
we have to make room for Voyager.
So yeah, that whole part of the galaxy just doesn't seem like a very happening place as far as, like, story development goes. Now, hopefully that'll change a little bit when we see the new featured episodes come out, with Deep Space Nine being at the forefront of it.
Yeah, they'll probably be about Space Jesus. They'll probably just...
God, I hope not.
I hope they bring back the Skreeans, the most annoying race in the galaxy.
Or they're looking for Kim'Tana or something like that.
Yeah. All right.
Which is their savior homeworld or something.
Do you remember the Skreeans? I think
I do.
Yeah, those
they
guys.
couldn't communicate at first because their language was, like, too complicated for the computer.
It's so weird. Those guys annoy me for so many reasons. The biggest one being that, like, they're just another example of the way that science fiction thinks matriarchal societies would work, where, like, the women are always, like, really bossy and annoying. And the men are always these, like, kind of shrunken ape-like creatures that... And, like, well, because obviously the only way we could possibly have a matriarchal society is if the men were literally incapable of taking care of themselves. Which is, you know, obviously because that's how the patriarchal society that we have works, right? Because, you know, the women are incapable of taking care of themselves, so we men must lead.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's exactly what it is. By the way, that was sarcasm, guys.
If you didn't read the sarcasm,
if you didn't pick up on that, we are not actually sexist assholes.
All right, so speaking of which, I'm going to get an entire ship full of women with the midriffs deleted because you can use the alternate uniform costumes.
Yep.
Because
that's how Jim has his ship set up.
Yeah, well, you know, Jim is a very special person.
Yes. But USS Meat Train comes to mind.
But all right, so Species 8472. What's going on with them in Star Trek Online?
Okay, so remember the whole Founders storyline?
With what Founder storyline? Which one?
Well, where they're infiltrating all these different powers.
Okay, yes.
Copy paste that and you got it.
Oh, right. Right, yeah, I read something about that. Species 8472 can shapeshift now.
Yeah, we found that on Voyager anyway.
Right, though. Yeah, that was actually the thing I was confused about, was that in Voyager they, like, made peace and made nice, and, like, but now Species
8472 doesn't feel that way anymore, I guess.
Apparently. Like, there was some...
Again, it's one of those things where I didn't really catch where the jump was supposed to be.
Well, the wiki had, like, some line of data that was, like, it had, like, one line of text that said there was indications that the Iconians had made the Species 8472 think that humanoids were attacking them in fluidic space, but, like... there was no source cited, and I have no idea where that information is supposed to be
from. Well, the only instance I remember of anything anywhere about anything from our galaxy going to their fluid space was the Borg.
Yeah.
The Borg were like, hey guys, we found this new space, let's assimilate it. And they say, hey, 472 is like, no, bro. That's not cool.
No, not cool. And then Voyager went into it once during that same storyline.
Yeah.
But so, the thing that I don't get is if Species 8472, and this was a problem in Voyager too, this isn't just Star Trek Online, but if Species 8472 felt threatened by the Federation and the other Alpha Quadrant powers, I wouldn't think they would need to bother with all this infiltration. I mean, even with the nanites, I would think that, like, you know, a dedicated fleet of Species 8472 ships would just wreck the Federation. Because
did we see them blow up a planet?
Yeah, well, I mean, they can blow up planets. Like, one shot from their main gun will blow up a starship.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, even with the nanites, it's just, you know, sure, the nanites can kill them, but, I mean, it just seems like the 8472 ships are just so much more powerful than anything that the Alpha Quadrant has to offer that I can't help but wonder why they don't just roll over everything.
Yeah, it's something that's bothered me, too, about everything and anything that has to do with the Species 8472, which I don't remember how they pronounce it. It's either Undine or Undyne.
Undyne. I looked at it Undyne. That's apparently what they call themselves, even though they don't have a spoken language.
Yeah.
So I don't know why.
I know there have been several people who pronounce it one way and some another, and I've asked them, like, you know, why they pronounce it as such, and I've just never gotten a straight answer on it.
Go check out the Undyne on Quonos. Quonos. I can't say that with a straight face.
But, That's actually why we have the Klingons and Federation at war right now.
Right.
Because, I feel that's a very driving force of why.
Well, you can sort of, that storyline is something that they set up so that they can basically anytime like one of the great powers needs to do something that doesn't make any sense, they can just say, oh, the Undyne did it. It was their fault. and that's just like their cover now for everything weird that happens.
Yeah. So we have Species 8472 mm-hmm. going around infiltrating all these different powers and different levels of them.
Right.
Now, the first indication that we saw of Undine, I'm just going to call him Undine from now on, yeah. Undine infiltration was when the Klingons finally take the Gorn homeworld after blockading it for like 3 years,
right.
or whatever it is. And they find out the king of the Gorn hegemony
mm-hmm.
was a infiltrator.
Man, that must have felt really good for the Klingons. They were like, man, we totally did this before with Cardassia, and we were really wrong that time, but we are so on this
redemption.
Time. We are so sure this time, man. Don't worry.
And there's actually other instances in the novel Needs of the Many, actually, as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so check this out.
Okay.
So we have, before the, there's full scale, or actually, no, wait, war was going on already. The Gorn had attacked the Klingons. Klingons responded in kind, and yeah. Cestus III was kind of in the middle of all this, right? Which yeah. Cassidy has some relative or friend on Cestus III. Cassidy mm-hmm. Yates from Deep Space
Nine. Yeah, I know who Cassidy is.
Now, obviously, she didn't want to see Cestus III drawn into the war because it would have been like a hotspot or something like that because Gorn hang out there too for whatever reason.
Uh-huh.
So she proposed that there be a baseball game between Klingons and Gorn to settle this. Now, the Klingons originally agreed to the baseball game because what we all know and remember of Gorn, because not a whole lot of people know a whole lot about Gorn, is that we just saw the big slow ones from the original series.
Right.
Apparently, there's several different, like, cast of Gorn, or species okay. of Gorn. Right. Some are smaller, more agile, some are bigger and stronger and slower. That's just what they are. And, the baseball team for the Gorn show up and are all, like, slim and athletic. The Klingon's like, oh, okay.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so they play their baseball game, and about halfway through the game, the Gorn pitcher suddenly turns into an Undyne. Or Undine.
I can't believe we just said those words in the same, like, halfway through the game, the Gorn pitcher turns into an Undyne. I'm putting that as my Facebook status. Oh, my goodness.
So we see that happen. Yeah. Right, and that just, you know, it's like, obviously, oh my gosh, you know, what's going on here? So the Klingons claim that the Gorn have to forfeit. The Gorn are like, no, we didn't forfeit, you know, it's like it was a tie, or
it was a technical foul is what it was.
Technical foul, all this stuff, and the war rages on, and then we see the Gorn get taken over anyway.
Wow. Your idea worked out, Cassidy.
Yeah, so, and there's also been people speculating that Admiral Quinn, who's kind of like the main chief character, or in the guy who's at least in charge, it seems, of Starfleet at the moment. Because yeah. you see him over Space Dock. He'd be like the, what you'd see, it's probably a bad analogy, like King Varian Wrynn from World of Warcraft for the Alliance.
Is that King Racist?
That is King Racist, but okay. Quinn isn't really King Racist.
I only know him as King Racist.
Okay, so King Racist,
yeah.
for your sake, he's like in charge, he sits in Stormwind, he's kind of in charge there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Jem'Pok, who is the Klingon Chancellor. They're right. kind of like the two guys. It's wildly speculated that these two guys, one of them is an infiltrator.
Whatever happened to Martok? Klingons can live for like a million years.
He got killed by Jem'Pok.
What?
Jem'Pok challenged him in combat and
won. What? Can yeah, I kill is... Jem'Pok? Is there some way I can kill Jem'Pok?
Well, you can talk to the Krypton developers and
I want to kill him so bad. He can't kill Martok. That's not cool.
Martok's dead, man.
He'd better be the bad guy. I swear
he'd better be the bad guy. And Worf sits on a bench outside of the Great Hall and just kind of sulks.
Worf, why aren't you in there right now mixing it up?
Worf's an old man.
I don't care. Worf is made of 20% more badass than any other person can, like, leap, can, like, you know, sustain. That's not cool. Martok can't die. Martok is, like, the greatest.
Worf is just sitting on a bench outside. That's a thing he does. Martok got killed because of, you know, honorable Klingon combat. And Jem'Pok definitely had more, like, I guess fire in his belly because he wanted the glorious Klingon Empire to be glorious and whatnot. He was looking for excuses to fight, essentially, is what it was.
F you, Jem'Pok.
Like, they took a whole bunch of Romulan space at one point, yeah. and the Romulans managed to hold them off, and then, the Gorn thing happened. They're fighting the Gorn, and they have the Noskans Orions in their territory.
Yep.
All this stuff.
I don't know if I have the will to live anymore. Martok is dead. this is so sad. Alright, so tell me about the Borg. What's going on with the Borg? I am so confused about the Borg.
Okay, well, there's a queen.
Is there a queen? Okay, that was going to be my question, was if we ever
because she's supposed to be the centerpiece of the new special task force that'll be coming out called Into the Hive.
Okay.
She'll be in there a part of that. The Borg are still trying to desperately take over the Federation or any parts of the Alpha Quadrant that they
can. Was it ever explained why the Borg weren't destroyed in Endgame, the end of Voyager, where it was claimed they were destroyed?
I don't believe that has been expanded on at all.
Okay.
You think it's just three-dimensional terms, Oren?
Oh dear, you just said that. Okay, I'm gonna go explore the fourth dimension. I'll be right back. The
fourth dimension.
So, like, as far as we know, they died, but then they got better.
They got better, that's right. They rubbed some dirt on it, they put some ice on it, and got back in the game.
So the first time we saw Borg, the first time the Borg showed up in the Federation, one cube was enough to ruin the Federation. The next time we saw them, one cube was enough to destroy almost an entire fleet, would have been enough if Picard hadn't shown up and told them all to shoot the same spot.
Everyone at the same spot.
Because that's a trick.
That's a trick.
And so now, in Star Trek Online, a fleet of Borg ships are getting destroyed by the Federation. What happened? What is going on here?
I can't tell you, because I honestly don't know, other than gameplay. You know, it's no fun to have 50 ships run around get blown up by one cube. It's just not.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
I guess it depends on how resilient your ship is. Like, I feel like my Excelsior could probably take a few hits. My Galaxy could just sit there forever.
Yep. I promise there's a Galaxy somewhere under all those particle effects.
Under all those particle effects, there's a Galaxy, I promise. You know, it's just... I really feel that a lot of this was just gameplay decisions. You know, it's just not very fun to have a single Borg cube just roll through space and blow away a whole bunch of, you know, of these ships. These player ships. It's just kind of not.
I mean, it would be fun
for you and I, because we're Star Trek fans and we understand how these things work. Now, for the average MMO player...
I mean, I feel like that would be cool as, like, a lead-up... As if you did, like, a quest that was, like, a lead-up to that, where, like... You know, the Borg ship was the big conclusion at the end. You had to fight the Borg ship, but, like, it's true. Just fighting that Borg ship for, like, 2 hours wouldn't be a very fun quest. But, like, you need to have
a quest. We already have a thing like that called the Crystalline Entity.
Oh, really?
Yes, and there's a very specific reason why it's such a pain in the ass.
Okay.
It's going to be a bit of a tangent. You remember the Crystalline Entity,
yes,
right?
I
Most
do.
People are going to know what that is. But there's a huge Crystal Entity thing that was what destroyed the colony... That data was created at.
Yeah.
Yeah, Omicron Theta or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
Omicron Persei 8.
Right. So there's this other crystalline entity wandering around the galaxy. In this case, the Alpha Centauri block in the TNBS sector, I think is what it is. It just kind of hangs out there.
Right.
It's a fleet action. You can go in there with other people and shoot at this thing and try to blow it up. Now, there's a very special trick to this thing that you have to learn and love, is that when it releases shards at about, I think, 30%, these shards will split into smaller shards if they're destroyed or hit your ship.
Yeah.
And will go back and heal the crystalline entity.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So, I mean, and some people say that the best strategy is just to ignore the shards altogether and put all your power to, like, the engines and just keep running around circles. You can certainly do that. You can also shoot at them if you want to. Just make sure you get them before they get to the entity.
Right.
Several strategies float out there, but what really, really makes it difficult to work is because there are so many different little strategies out there for how people handle it.
Yeah.
They all do kind of their own thing, and thus nothing ever gets done. And then Crystal Entity just gets healed back up to like 80%, and it's just like, ah!
Yeah, okay. See, this is again...
I mean, I've been in a Crystal Entity for 3 hours myself.
This is the same reason. This is another reason why having multiple people around ruins a story, because you can't count on them to do what they need to do.
It's not really a story. It's just like, oh man, Crystalline Entity is there. Starfleet's like, shoot it dead,
shoot it with lasers,
shoot it with lasers, and just make sure it's dead. If it's not dead, you're not doing it right, which we weren't doing it right.
Nope. Okay, so I have another question about the Borg. Why,
yes.
If I'm playing a liberated drone, am I only allowed to play a human or Klingon liberated drone?
Because no one else gets assimilated. Duh.
I want to play liberated Sonic the Hedgehog. For reference, that was an in-joke because Bob recently made an alien that looks a lot like Sonic the Hedgehog. I think it does. I mean, as much as it's ever gonna... Because, like, it's got, like, the blue spinities on the back and the sort of tan, like, fur on the front. And then it's really short, so when he moves, his legs have to run super fast. You know, he's not actually going any faster than any other
species.
Yeah, the
little guy's on a mission when he's running. He's on a mission.
But he looks like Sonic the Hedgehog, and I want to play that guy as a liberated Borg.
I don't know what to tell you. It's just not a thing.
That's too bad. All right, so...
Oh, yeah, V'ger's in the game, too.
Right, V'ger? Yeah, I remember that.
Space log.
Apparently there are, like, 10 V'gers.
There are 10 of them.
Yeah, the idea being that like there have been some comparisons made that like V'ger from Star Trek the Motion Picture is kind of like a Borg ship. And apparently Kryptik decided to take that and run with it and be like, it just is a Borg ship.
Well, the only place I've seen that actually mentioned in writing was The Return by William Shatner.
Right. I think we actually talked about this at one point.
There might have been on Wikipedia episode somewhere as well, yeah. So, I don't know if that's a thing or not. Kryptik seems to think it is. I mean, they would have had to have run it by CBS, and CBS would probably have said, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I guess.
So, that's a thing now.
Alright. Well, so...
And it shoots those plasma bolts, and if they hit you, you in fact get vaporized in that same manner.
As the Klingon ships do? And, yep. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's not very cool when it happens to you. It happened to me once.
It sounds cool.
And then my ship respawned.
Oh, alright. Yeah, right. It's okay, guys. I got better.
It's okay.
Alright, so the next, I think the last race we're going to touch on today is the Defuri, which I know nothing about. So okay. Take it away, Bob.
Defuri are a race that have been introduced in Star Trek Online, and they run with the line, we want to bring balance to all things. All things in balance all the time.
Okay.
Now, this is very, very conflicting, I feel.
Oh, really?
Because they seem to be all about peace and tranquility, but balance to everything, right?
Yeah.
But it's very blatantly obvious that you're being used by them to fend off the Breen and figure out what's going on with this Preserver Archives, which actually is a lead off of, remember the episode The Chase? Where it's got those...
Oh, the one with the answer to life, the universe, and everything at the end?
Yes.
Yeah, the one where they're chasing through, like, DNA fragments.
Yeah.
Yes, I do remember that one.
And I really feel that they weren't represented very correctly, because I think if there was a race out there that said, hey, we want to have balance in all things, they wouldn't be the pussies we see them to be in Star Trek Online.
Probably
they're
not.
They're such wusses, yeah. We'd see them probably be more militaristic, much more, like, geared up and ready for a fight. Well, if anything.
Yeah. I mean, because if your mission is balance, everyone else is evil, you have to be prepared to actually work to obtain this good.
Yeah, and it's just not, at least for the Federation side, you're definitely being used. And the Defuri are like, yeah, we used you guys, we're our bad.
What does a Defuri even look like?
A Defuri looks, well, they're humanoid. They mm-hmm. stand like, you know, 6-7 feet tall. They have a sloped head, which comes up to a bit of a point.
Cone heads?
Sort of.
Okay.
They have these ears that they're kind of like Vorta ears, well, not Vorta.
Elf ears?
It's not elf ears, not pointy. They like got like big long lobes, sort of. Not like a Ferengi ear, okay. But kind of like a smaller, thinner Ferengi ear, almost.
Okay.
And sometimes they got like a weird ridge thing on their head, and they're green, like a bluish green.
And green, okay. Alright, yeah. I think I got a good image of them. So
yeah, and I really felt strongly that there needed to be some counterbalance to this, oh, peace and love, balance, ooh, thing. So that's where I actually came in with some of my Foundry missions.
Yeah.
And showed a much more darker side of it, and kind of painted it more like the Iraq War.
Yeah. Ooh, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, because the Breen were all up in their grill, like, causing mm-hmm. them trouble, and then Federation, like, kicks them out and whatnot, and then the Federation, like, trains them.
Yeah.
It's very much a breach of, like, the Prime Directive and whatnot, which I make mention of in the episode, which is a conversation that you have with several other Starfleet officers. It's like, well, like, this is against the Prime Directive. Why'd the Federation Council say this is a good thing? That's not important. Don't worry about it.
No, it'll be cool, guys. It'll be cool.
It's cool, because we wanted them to defend themselves, and this is kind of a thing we wanted to try out, and oh man, it didn't work out so well.
What are the Breen doing now? I completely forgot about the Breen. Are they anything other than guys to shoot?
They seem to act a lot like privateers.
Okay, so they're basically the wolves of this game. It's like, oh look, you can kill that wolf and you don't have to worry
about
it. Sort of.
I mean, we only see the Breen and interact with the Breen through this featured episodes with the Defuri. Uh-huh. That's the only kind of, and the dailies you can do out there as well for emblems. It's the only interaction we have with the Breen, which it seems like they have some organization still, like a military structure of some sort. But there's no real sense of what their goals or aims are beyond, like, wanton raiding of anything that's, like, weaker than them.
Huh. That's not what I remember the Breen being like. But, alright. I mean, like, we know the Breen took down, like, the Ravnok, that was it. But, like, other than that, the Breen seemed pretty, you know, pretty cool until, like, they had the chance to just ruin everyone's day with the Dominion. And then they were
I heard there was a war going on over here, and you guys are on the winning side. Can we join?
They were actually on the losing side at that point.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, they joined in.
Which makes me wonder what was going on with the Breen.
I don't get the Breen. I just don't understand.
Well, my assumption with the Breen is that they harbor, like, you know, the dreams of ambition. Like, they have these ambitions of conquest. but they've never had the manpower. They obviously have very advanced technology, but they've never had the manpower to carry out their conquest. But then suddenly the Dominion was like, hey guys, if you give us some of your super awesome technology that you've got and help us out in this fight, we have the manpower to make your dreams of conquest a reality. So that was what I assumed it was all about.
That seems likely. I could see that.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, if I get a Star Trek Online account, I'm going to use Bob's Foundry to make a mission about the Breen. Because I feel like the Breen needs some development.
The Breen needs some more stuff, it's sure. All right. That's for sure.
And I think with that, we will close out this episode. I'm thinking next week, we should talk about the new Star Trek movie, because we haven't talked a whole lot about that. You just want
to dedicate an hour and a half to that?
I feel like there's more than enough to talk about there.
I feel there is, too, but most of it would just be rage. Not that we don't rage at all, anyway.
Look, I feel like this is the thing that's going to happen, all right? So, signing off, we will see you guys next week.